So we've gotten through chapters 1 through 7, and if you'll look back to your outline, you'll see that there's a break and we move into chapters 8 and 9. So Paul, up to this point, has been speaking to the Corinthians about his ministry. He's been talking to them about his ministry. He has been in telling them about his ministry, trying to make sure that their detractors who have been talking against him do not discredit his ministry, that they don't discredit his character. And he wants to make sure that that his ministry is being fulfilled. And if it was discredited, or if his character was discredited, then what would that mean for his ministry? It would mean that it wasn't worth anything. And so we've just got through chapters 1 through 7. Now we're moving into 8 and 9, where Paul shifts focus for a minute and he talks about this collection. Now, collection for the saints. First off, I'll ask this question. We've had lessons on this. We've had discussions on this, classes on it. So Mama, I'm going to ask the question, who was this collection for? The brethren in Jerusalem. All right. There are three places that this collection is discussed. We'll look over at 1 Corinthians. flip over to 1 Corinthians chapter 16. I'll try to do this in chronological order. We'll go to the letters that Paul wrote first, then we'll go, work through so you can kind of see what Paul has been discussing. 1 Corinthians chapter 16 says, "Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I directed the churches of Galatia, so do you also." So here he is talking about this is a collection for the saints. Now Paul wrote the 1 Corinthian letter when he was in Macedonia. Go over to the 2 Corinthian letter. 1 Corinthian letter, in Ephesus. Yes, I'm sorry. Go over to 2 Corinthians 8 again. Who is this collection for? 8:4 says, "Begging us with much urging for the favor of participation in the support of the saints." So again, we've identified this is for the saints. Continue on down to chapter 1 of verse 9. Chapter 1 verse 9 says, "It is superfluous for me to write to you about the ministry to the saints." And then again to verse 12, "For the ministry of this service is not only fully supplying the needs of the saints, but is also overflowing through many thanksgivings to God." Finally, go over to Romans. Romans chapter 15. Romans chapter 15. Verse 25, it says, "But now I'm going to Jerusalem serving the saints. For Macedonia and Achaia have been pleased to make a contribution for the poor among the saints in Jerusalem." Skip down to verse 31. "That I may be rescued from those who are disobedient in Judah, and that my service for Jerusalem may prove acceptable to the saints." Now, I said that these three letters mention this same collection. If you look at the third missionary journey, Paul was in Ephesus when he wrote 1 Corinthians. He goes on to Macedonia and writes his second letter. And then he is in Corinth when he writes Romans. So this is the track that he had followed in his third missionary journey. Then you get over to, let's go over to Acts. Acts chapter 21. All we're trying to do right now is to establish who is this for. It becomes important when we look at application for us today. Acts chapter 21, verse 15, it says, "After these days we got ready and started our way up to Jerusalem." So we've got in chapter 20 where he was in Corinth, and then he continues his journey back. In verse 15, he is headed to Jerusalem. Verse 17, "After we arrived in Jerusalem, the brethren received us gladly. And the following day, Paul went with us to James, and all the elders were present. After he had greeted them, he began to relate one by one the things which God had done among the Gentiles through his ministry." Go over to Acts chapter 24. Acts Acts chapter 24, verse 17, Paul is before Felix and he says, "Now after several years I came to bring alms to my nation and to present offerings." Again, so we look at it from a chronological standpoint. We've looked at the letters. Paul wrote 1 Corinthians and he talks about this collection. He moves on to 2 Corinthians. He talks about this collection. He writes to the Roman brethren. He talks about this same collection. And then you see that he arrives in Jerusalem. And then here, talking to Felix, he said he was bringing alms to his nation. So we can see that there is a thread here talking about, you know, who he's talking about. He's talking about the saints in Jerusalem. Now, there would be some confusion, you know, when we talk about who these saints are. Some people may say, well, it just says saints. And from what I was able to look up, saints, you know, in my references says it just means holy ones. Or somebody may go to Acts chapter 24 and say, well, he said he came to bring alms to my nation and to present offerings. So, you know, we want to solidify that, you know, we've done so to an extent that in chronological order that Paul was heading to and coming to Jerusalem. But we want to clarify this because it helps us to establish what a collection that we would partake in would be for as well, or who it would be for. So look over at Acts chapter 9. Let's look at this idea of a saint for a minute. Again, trying to establish who this collection was for. Acts chapter 9, in verse 11, it says, "And the Lord said to him," meaning Ananias, "get up and go to the street called Straight and inquire at the house of Judas for a man from Tarsus named Saul, for he is praying." Verse 13, "But Ananias answered, Lord, I have heard from many about this man, how much harm he did to your saints at Jerusalem." So this idea of a saint, that he says right here, your saints. Okay, this is clarifying this is God's holy people. Or this is, in this instance, it's God's and holy ones. Okay, so your saints in Jerusalem. So we're trying to tie this thread together. Go to look at Acts chapter 26. Acts chapter 26, verse 10 says, "And this is just what I did in Jerusalem. Not only did I lock up many of the saints in prison, having received authority from the chief priests, but also when they were being put to death, I cast my vote against them." So what we're trying to do here, trying to establish who Paul is, who this collection is for. It becomes important because today's term of saint may be used as God's people. They may try to open it up to just anyone, to support orphans' homes, to support the poor in the community, that sort of stuff. We're trying to establish who Paul is bringing, or who the collection is for. And so through these passages, I'm trying to show that this is specifically referring to the saints or the church in Jerusalem. Go over to Acts chapter 1. So again, we've seen that in chapter 9 it says your saints at Jerusalem, and 26 it says the saints in prison and he was putting them to death. Now Acts chapter 8. Acts chapter 8 says Saul was in hearty agreement with putting him to death, being Stephen. And on that day, a great persecution began against the church in Jerusalem. Skip down to verse 3. "But Saul began ravaging the church." All right, so we're able to run this thread through. All right, Acts chapter 8, Paul is persecuting the church in Jerusalem. verse 3, it says he's ravaging the church. You go over to chapter 9, Ananias calls them your saints in Jerusalem. And then throughout the letters that we've looked at so far, Paul is calling them saints. So I think using this thread, we can establish that this collection was for the church or the saints in Jerusalem. More specifically, the poor saints in Jerusalem. The poor of the saints in Jerusalem. Any question as to how we come to that conclusion? because it becomes very important in practical application as to why we collect funds and who we give them to. All right, looks like everybody follows my train of thought. All right, so who was contributing to this collection? And I'll ask the question of the audience. Who was contributing to this collection? Well, we're studying the letter of 2 Corinthians, so I would suggest that the saints in Corinth, they're a part of this chapters 8 and 9. Paul's writing to them about this collection. Yes, sir. So you've got not only the saints here in Corinth or of Achaia, but you've got the saints in Macedonia. And then also, if you look over at 1 Corinthians chapter 16, it says, "Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I directed the churches of Galatia." Now, there's no way to definitively establish that the collection directed to the churches in Galatia was the exact same collection that was going on for those in Corinth or for those in Macedonia, but it was for the same purpose. And so he tells them, you know, as I directed the churches in Galatia, do these things. And then he talks about where he's going. So you've got these people who are collecting for the saints in Jerusalem. Back in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, we see this established. I don't want to just take it at face value. It says in 8:1, "Now, brethren, we wish to make known to you the grace of God which has been given in the churches of Macedonia," it goes on to talk about this collection that they've been partaking in. Go to chapter 9, verse 2. "For I know your readiness, of which I boast about you to the Macedonians, namely, that Achaia has been prepared since last year, and your zeal has stirred up most of them." So here we've got who is contributing and who is it going to. If you would look over at, let's look at chapter 16, verse 1 one more time. No, chapter 16, verse 3. I don't know that this is of any consequence, but I found this interesting as I was studying this, as to determine who was taking part in this collection. And when we reference Macedonia or Achaia, those are regions. There are congregations a part of those regions. in chapter 3 it says, "I will send them with letters to carry, when I arrive, whomever you may approve, I will send them with letters to carry your gift to Jerusalem." If you look over at 2 Corinthians 8, verse 23 says, "As for Titus, he is my partner and fellow worker among you. As for our brethren, they are messengers of the churches, a glory to Christ." So you've got this collection for the Jerusalem saints. You've got these congregations giving to that collection. But, you know, what I found interesting is who may have been taking part. We know that these regions, this Macedonian region, this Achaean region, congregations there. But let's look over that these were being carried by messengers or by those that have been approved. So let's look over to Acts chapter 20. Who was traveling with Paul? The reason why I bring this up is because you look at this and you see, well, churches of Macedonia, and sometimes I get to a point where I'm just thinking, well, that was one church, as opposed to that's a region and there are churches established in that region. So this is several churches in these regions who are contributing to this this collection. So we look through at Acts 20 verse 4, and it says, "And he was accompanied," being Paul, "accompanied by Sopater of Berea, the son of Phariaeus, and Aristarchus and Secundus of Thessalonians, and Gaius of Derbe, and Timothy and Tychicus and Trophimus of Asia. And so it's interesting to me because you can go and you can trace some of these people, and I'm not saying that that's what they're there for, but I find it interesting that Derbe is in the Galatian region, that Thessalonians is in the Macedonian region, Berea is in the Macedonian region also. And so it's interesting to see that you may have representatives, these people who were approved, these messengers traveling with Paul. And so you kind of are able to establish maybe what churches are contributing. So it's not, it's more specific. You know, these are the places that Paul had been preaching, had helped to establish. And it helps you to give a more full view of who was willing to help the saints, those poor amongst the Jerusalem brethren. And I just say that because, again, sometimes it looks like it may have just been Macedonian church. Well, that's not what it is. There are churches established in the Macedonian region, same in Galatia, same in Achaia. And so just there are more contributing than just two churches. There are several, and they were all willing to contribute to this collection. Now, again, I'm not solidifying that these people were traveling for that region, but I do find it interesting. And so it helps you to pinpoint that there are more than two churches and kind of help establish what churches might be helping in this collection. Any questions or thoughts on that? All right. All right, so why did they give to the saints? I'll open that up to the audience. I know that's a loaded question, especially without class material, but why did they give to the saints?
There was a famine in Jerusalem,
right? I could never pinpoint that.
Well,
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not saying you're wrong, but I was not necessarily what caused them to be poor, but why were they giving? I was thinking the same thing, but I'm not going to touch that. I'm actually thinking, going to Acts chapter, 2 Corinthians 8, verse 13. There were needy saints in Jerusalem, but here's a reason why that these brethren would be giving. 2 Corinthians 8, verse 13 says, "For this is not for the ease of others and for your affliction, but by way of equality. At this present time, your abundance being a supply for their need, so that their abundance also may become a supply for your need, that there may be equality." Look over at chapter 9. Chapter 9, verse 11. "You will be enriched in everything for all liberality, which through us is producing thanksgiving to God. For the ministry of this service is not only fully supplying the needs of the saints, but is also overflowing through many thanksgivings to God." You know, the idea here is that they were giving. There was a need in Jerusalem, but they were giving out of abundance to supply for their needs, so that their abundance also may become a supply for your need, and so that there may be equality. This is Gentiles giving to Jews, but if you look at 8:1, it says this is the grace of God. There's no distinguishing it.
And so, saying it's quid pro quo?
No, I'm not saying it's quid pro quo. I'm looking at the idea that there may be equality amongst them, that there is no difference between Jews and Gentiles. I'm not saying that they gave so that they could get back. I'm saying up until now you have Jews and Gentiles who had not mixed amongst each other. They mixed like oil and water. Okay, the Jews were the selected people of God. All right, now you have Christ who has come for all mankind. All right, this is the grace of God. There is no difference between the two. And at this present time, your abundance being a supply for their need, so that their abundance also may become a supply for your need, that there may be equality. Look over at Acts.
Hey,
yes, sir.
You know, when this money that's going to be sent to Jerusalem, couldn't it be taken up because they were part of the first 2,000 Christians, become saints, followers of Jesus after the Pentecost? And Jews' hierarchy was out to do away with all Christians and saints. So they have to kind of be in hiding in Jerusalem, trying to make a living and trying to get money and stuff. but hiding because they're saints and following Jesus, and the Jews are after them, so they need money and stuff to help them live and just, you know, find places and stuff.
Well, I don't know what secular history teaches on this as far as what the current conditions of Jerusalem was, whether there was a famine. Obviously, there was persecution going on. But if you look at Romans chapter 15, verse 26, it says the contribution was for the poor among the saints in Jerusalem. Why they were poor, I'm not looking to get into as much as that this was for those people in Jerusalem, which I think you're talking more about maybe why they were poor. I think this here specifically says that it's for the poor among the saints in Jerusalem. And so that's what the collection, that's why they were collecting money, to take care of the needy saints there. If you look over at Acts, again, we'll look at this again. We read over a couple of these verses a second ago. But it says, after we arrived in Jerusalem, the brethren received us gladly. And the following day, Paul went in with us to James, and the elders and all the elders were present. And after he had greeted them, he began to relate one by one the things which God had done amongst the Gentiles through his ministry. When they had heard it, they began to glorify God. You know, so the Jerusalem brethren were happy that the Gentiles were receiving his ministry. Obviously, they were happy that they were becoming a part of the fold. And so you're starting to see this idea. When I'm referencing equality, as part, I'm not talking about a quid pro quo. You do for me, so I'll do for you. I'm talking about the idea that they're all God's people. All right. And so does anybody have? Yes, ma'am.
By them giving, they're showing that they feel that the Gentiles are equal with them, and vice versa. And, that's a need for us, you know. We give, and it becomes something. We don't get it in return that, but we get the. You know what I'm trying to say?
The good word to describe this is fellowship. You know, okay, so you have these congregations who are, you know, you're trying to, again, you've got these two groups of people. You've had the Jews who have segregated themselves from the Gentiles for so long because they've been under a different law. Christ comes. Now you're all being reconciled to God through Christ Jesus. So you're all God's children. So now we're equal in God's eyes. There's no Jews and Gentiles. There are God's children, and there are Christians. And so the idea here is that they start showing this fellowship, or I would say that's what this is, this equality. You know, we're all equal in the sight of God. We Gentiles are willing to help you Jews because we're Christians. It's not the race, or it's not our nationality. It is the fact that we are all equal in the sight of God. And so they're giving so that they can fulfill their needs, but they're doing this because they are equal. Questions, comments? I thought I saw another hand. Yes, sir.
I was trying to figure out where you were reading from, what chapter that was in Acts. I didn't see where you were reading that.
In Acts chapter 21, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I think it was Acts 21:17. I'm going to put that in your notes. Acts 21:17, Herb.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, sir. Oh, I'm sorry.
My name is Jerry, by the way. I appreciate you allowing me to speak out here. I was under the impression, when you asked that question about who was the money for, wasn't a portion of that money to be taken and set aside for the apostles and the other workers that were traveling through and passing through? Because I remember when Paul was in prison and he sent for a coat, he wanted to have a coat sent to him. I don't know if it was his coat already, but he wanted something. But I thought the churches would send money to them to help in their struggles and in their survival.
When we're talking about, so I guess I should clarify this, because We're talking about this specific collection. We're not talking about all collections that churches would take up. We're talking about this specific collection. In my studies, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but in my studies, this collection was specifically for the saints in Jerusalem. Now, Paul does go on to say later on in the 2 Corinthians chapter that he said he robbed other churches. 11:8, I robbed other churches by taking wages for them to serve you, which there would have been money sent to him, collections taken for that purpose. But this collection, from everything that I've read, was specifically to help the poor saints in Jerusalem. So I'm not excluding that other collections could have been taken to support for the needs of preachers, but specifically we're talking about supporting those needy saints in Jerusalem. Does that answer your question? All right, thank you. Any other questions on that? Yes, sir.
Two verses you're talking about in 2 Corinthians 8, 14, 15. It's very simple that he sent the saints at the present time, 1 Corinthians. Those brethren are in need. You're helping supply that need. Should there come a time, those brethren are, you're in need, those brethren can supply This is totally contrary to the concept of a sponsoring church, where a church says, we're going to take on this work, we don't have the money, we need $100,000, would everybody send money? That's a created and nothing to have in this particular situation. This is for saints in need, the poor among the saints. And then when that need is met, that ends. It's not an ongoing contribution to these other churches. So totally different from what's practiced in the Church of Christ today, where churches continue to funnel money to some centralized church to do some kind of work that they have assumed instead of being assigned.
Well, to that comment, you look at what we've looked at these verses a couple of times when you're talking about sending to a sponsoring church, and that would be churches sending to another congregation, or one, what they would call the sponsoring church, and then that church would send the money and disperse it. That's not what was going on here. You look at those verses we talked about a second ago, 16:3, it said, whomever you may approve, and then we're already in 2 Corinthians 8. You look over here, as for Titus, he is my partner and fellow worker among you. As for our brethren, they are messengers of the churches of glory of Christ. So they have not sent money to the Corinthian brethren, so the Corinthian brethren can disperse it as said, as they want, or as they've directed. But they are messengers carrying these funds as messengers, as the approved of these congregations, to bring them to the Jerusalem brethren. So this idea of a sponsoring church is not supported by the text. Now we'll get a little bit more into that. Not Wednesday, but Sunday. As we look through this, we're going to look today at the, what this was for. Look at the background. Wednesday, we'll talk more about attitudes and the attitudes of these Corinthian brethren, the attitudes of the Macedonians in their giving, and then practical application for us. And then next Sunday, Lord willing, we'll get into more of sponsoring churches and what does this and does this not authorize, as we see in today's society.
One other point, Keith, you made the point, and a good one, that several churches are involved in this collection for these saints in Jerusalem. So this is an example of what we might call church cooperation. But it's a specific form of church cooperation. The reason I bring that up is back in the 50s and 60s of the last century, brethren who opposed the sponsoring church, for example, several kinds of church cooperation were accused of being anti-cooperation. That's a misnomer. That's not true. I am, and anybody who respects the Scripture, anti-cooperation. That is not authorized in Scripture. But there is a kind of church cooperation that is authorized, and we're reading about it.
Yes, sir. I agree. Touch more on that next Sunday.
Okay.
all right, so moving forward then. Simple question. When was the collection gathered? When was it supposed to be gathered? First day of every week. So just as 1 Corinthians 16:2, on the first day of every week, each one of you is to put aside and save. So they had established this idea of doing it so that when Paul came, the funds would be available for him to take them on, or for them to those traveling to take them on. So why is Paul writing to them about this contribution? So we've talked about this collection, this contribution. We'll call it a collection. We're talking why Paul is writing to them about this collection. So we'll kind of bring it back into focus. Paul's been writing to the Corinthian brethren. He's been defending his ministry. In chapter 7, he's talked about he boasts in them. He has confidence in them. And then we've got this kind of this shift, you know, in his writing to this collection. Well, one reason why Paul's writing about this collection is he's urging them to complete it. If you look at chapter 8, verse 10, he says, "I give my opinion in this matter, for this is to your advantage, who were the first to begin a year ago, not only to do this, but also to desire to do it." You skip down to chapter 9, verse 5. He says, "So I thought it necessary to urge the brethren that they would go on ahead to you and arrange beforehand your previously promised bountiful gift, so that the same would be ready as a bountiful gift and not affected by your covetousness." So he's urging them to complete this collection. He's written to them about it in 1 Corinthians 16. Now he's writing to them again so that they'll be prepared. The collection will be prepared when he gets there. So he shifted focus from his ministry now to the fact that he's been boasting about them. Or he's shifted his focus now to this collection because they said that they were going to do it. Now he wants them to finish it so when he arrives, it will be ready. Another reason why Paul wrote to them about this collection, 8:1, "Now, brethren, we wish to make known to you the grace of God, which has been given in the churches of Macedonia." Verse 2, "that in a great ordeal of affliction, their abundance of joy and their deep poverty overflowed in the wealth of their liberality." Skip down to verse 4, "begging with us much urging for the favor of participation in the support of the saints." So another reason why he's writing to them is to make known to them the grace of God in this gift, and the fact that the churches of Macedonia are willing to give. What grace? I mean, this is the grace of God that these people are willing to do this. Then he says he's writing also to make sure that his boasting is not empty. Skip over to chapter 9. Chapter 9, verse 2. "For I know your readiness, of which I boasted about you to the Macedonians, namely that that Achaia has been prepared since last year." Okay, so he writes to them and he's boasting. Verse 3 says, "But I have sent the brethren in order that our boasting about you may not be made empty in this case, so that, as I was saying, you may be prepared." So he's writing to them so that his boasting about them to the Macedonian brethren wouldn't be an empty boast, that they would have this collection ready. Verse 4, "Otherwise, if any Macedonians come with me and find you unprepared, we, not to speak of you, will be put to shame by this confidence." So Paul has been talking to the Macedonian brethren. He's been talking the Corinthian brethren up. You were first to want to do this collection. We have been boasting about you wanting to do this. Now let's get it completed so our boasting is not empty and so you're not put to shame. I skipped over a phrase in verse 2. Another reason why Paul was writing to them about this collection was this little phrase here. "So, and your zeal has stirred up most of them." And the idea that their zeal had stirred up these emotions in these Macedonian brethren to want to contribute, to want to partake in this collection for the needy saints. You look down at verse 13, "Because of the proof given by this ministry, they will glorify God for your obedience to your confession of the gospel of Christ and for the liberality of your contribution to them and to all." Now, in verse 2, he's talking about the zeal was stirred up in the Macedonian brethren. Now, in verse 13, he's talking about the Jerusalem brethren. Back to verse 12, "For the ministry of this service is not only fully supplying the needs of the saints. Because of the proof given by this ministry, they will glorify God for your obedience." So what does it do for those Jerusalem brethren to see that those not only Christian brethren, but Gentiles will be willing to give to them? Then you go back to Acts chapter 21, And Acts chapter 21, verse 20, and when they had heard, they began glorifying God. Now, this was about them receiving the ministry, but they would be. But they would be glorifying God as well because, verse 13, because of this collection been taken up and being provided. So the idea that this giving would stir up the zeal in other people. So I guess for me, when I was looking at this practical application, when the churches in Louisiana, when the brethren in Louisiana lost homes, you know, the Humble Church of Christ was willing to provide for the needs of the needy saints over there. People, I think 14 families lost homes. They were needing, you know, I think $500,000 just to get back up on their feet because it was total losses. All right. So us supplying or being willing to supply for those needs as other people hear, or vice versa, as we hear that other people are willing to help needy saints who are not necessarily in our area, who aren't necessarily people that we would know specifically or know personally, but the fact that they're Christian brethren serving the same God we are, with the same faith, with the same ambition, the same hope, the same zeal that we are. When you hear other congregations wanting to supply for their needs, doesn't it make you want to supply for their needs as well? It helps to stir up your emotions, the want to help other brethren, other Christians, to get back on their feet, to help continue on in life. Does that make sense? Struggling with words this morning, so. So, again, so we're down to about 5 minutes left in class. So, practical application for us, you know, as we look at who this was for, who was contributing, but more importantly, you know, the why and the why did they give, and the what did it do, or this idea of, let me rephrase that. Here we go. So the why this was being written, and then this why what does this help us to do in giving, I guess would be a better way to put it. Practical application for us. We talked about, you know, the zeal that it would stir up in other people, but we as a congregation collect funds every Sunday. You know, we have a contribution in this church. What does it do? It goes to support the local work. It also goes to support preachers abroad. It also is used for needy saints. Now, here we're talking about needy saints, but the idea of being prepared. Now, Paul told them to, every first day of the week, set aside some funds so that they would be prepared. Now, we have an obligation at this congregation to support this work. But we have an obligation as well to help spread the gospel and to be there for those needy saints. That's why we take up this collection. As we do this, this is why we do it every Sunday. We don't want to wait and then find ourselves in a position where we haven't been doing our duty and there is a need and we're not able to supply for it. I mean, obviously we can't supply for everyone, but we have a responsibility to take up a collection, to give as we're prospered, so that we can supply for the needs here and the needs abroad. What other practical applications do you take away from this context?
Confirming what you just said, by the way, is a statement you read in chapter 8, in verse 10. You were first to begin a year ago, and in chapter 9, in verse 2, you also read, a key has been prepared since last year. This is written in the summer or fall of 57. Last year, we put it before the First Corinthians letter. So 1 Corinthians 16 was not a command to give. They already planned to give when that letter was written. It was when to give so that when he came, it would be ready. The very point you just made, and it confirms what you just said. That was a plan so the money would be ready to meet the need.
which is why we do it every Sunday. So we purpose in our hearts. We're doing this because it is something that we're supposed to do.
Keith, also it's a reason why that we meet prior year to plan for the next year, to have a certain amount of things, that obligations that we have to meet as a congregation, to overlook those, to see what the state of our congregational finances are, and to make those plans to be able to continue to help those men that we support and the works that we help.
Something else, when we talk about the budget, and we talked about this before, this is why we give specifically we give directly. We don't send our money off to an association. We don't send our money off to another congregation. We purpose here to give to those who are abroad preaching and teaching. We give to those who are in need, but we do it specifically. We ourselves do it specifically. We don't send it off to somebody else. This is, again, the plan that was laid out here for the Corinthian brethren. We see it across three different letters, that this was what they were told to do, that you were supposed to give directly, as opposed to send on to a sponsoring church, to an association. And then who do we give to exactly? Well, again, here we've established that it was to the saints. I would challenge you to find somewhere where it says that they give to orphans' homes, or they give to the Rotary Club, or they give to society. That's not what this collection was for. That's not what collections are for in general. Specifically, we're here talking about the collection for the needy saints. So this is why we supply for the needy saints, but not for other people. It doesn't mean that's not a good work, but it's not the design. It's not the design that was set forth for the local work. You doing it individually is fine. But again, it's not about being a good work. It's about what is authorized and what is not authorized. That makes sense. All right. It looks like our time is about up. Material hopefully will be available tonight. When we get ready to prepare for Wednesday, as you grab your material, let's think about attitudes. Let's look through the material and think about the attitude that they had when they gave. And then applicable, how does it apply to us as we're giving today? Thank you for your kind attention.